fantasy show tonight. Everybody, you know, today is September 29th, and I assume that everybody is going to have their pools within the next week or so, probably this weekend, because the NHL season starts October 7th, Thursday night. Next week is our three-hour NHL season preview, but hockey pools are almost entirely booked for this weekend, maybe the weekend after. So we're very, very, very excited about tonight's show.
Couldn't say it better myself. Of course, joining Richard and I in the room, the man who's got so many energy drinks on front of him on the desk, he may fly out of here after the show tonight. Ezra Ginsberg, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Drew. The only reason I have two energy drinks in here is because apparently you can only buy energy drinks in twos now. If you go to 7-Eleven or wherever, I guess energy drink sales are down because I had to take two, but nobody else wanted one, so I'll drink two and I'll be flying off the handles here. But it's great to be here, and I'd like to draft Drew Mandel first overall right off the bat.
Well, that's a smart draft pick. This coming from the guy, Ezra Ginsberg, of course, was he's historically, you know, one of the greatest all-time first overall draft picks in the Jewish hockey league.
That's right.
So, you know, Ezzy did lead his team to a championship year, if I'm not mistaken.
Right,
that
also,
was, of course, tragic to his prior to his tragic ACL injury that cut short his promising Jewish hockey career. You know, upsetting, and so, you know, he lives vicariously now through this radio show.
What are we promoting, like a 30 for 30, like washed up Winnipeg Jewish athletes who were never good?
I'd watch that in a second, let me tell you. Anyways, and of course, we're going to hear from Michael Remus later on. He's setting up the cameras for the people on Ustream tonight. So we'll hear from Remus and the R Desk, where you can join him for the live chat and the live video. Let's get underway, guys. Let's start with, you know, it's the top of the show. It's a fantasy hockey preview. You might as well start the show with the best players in the NHL. Richard, you have first overall in a hockey draft. Who are you taking?
Yeah, Drew, this is... Some back in the day, it would be an easy question, you know, Wayne Gretzky or Mario Lemieux or Jaromir Jagr, but not so much because, you know, Lemieux and Gretzky's careers in terms of the prime of their careers really didn't overlap. And in this situation, you have Crosby and Ovechkin at the peaks of their careers. It obviously depends on what kind of draft you're doing. Now, if you're doing a regular Canadian kind of points draft, just whoever gets the most points, first overall pick, it's a very tough selection. I would probably lean towards Crosby if you're going just points. But if you're going in a pool with, you know, rotisserie with goals and penalty minutes and all that stuff, or a pool that rewards, you know, I'm in a pool myself that rewards goals over assists, you know, 2 points for a goal, Ovechkin is probably the pick. I mean, it's one of the two because of Crosby's 50 goals last year. Not saying he'll repeat that, but it's one of the two. But I think depending on the pool, you have to understand what the point system is before you're drafting. Having said that, if it was just a quick, I don't know what pool you're in, who's it going to be, I would still take Ovechkin 1, Crosby 2.
Let's go, I mean, it's sort of, everybody's got different pools with different formats, but I think the most common pool probably is your one goal, one assist.
Sure.
So they're very straightforward. So let's use
that as our
base throughout most of the show, unless we say differently.
Okay.
So we'll go with that. Ezzy, you're first. You run a hockey pool. It's known as the Whiz Bang Hockey Pool.
That's right, and we usually just do a simple snake draft where if there's 10 teams, you know, whoever gets the first pick, you know, it snakes back and forth, and you know, we go straight points. I think a couple of years we've thrown in, like, you know, an overtime rule, or we've had goalies, but most of the time that doesn't work unless you're doing pickups. Goalies in drafts rarely work unless there's pickups, because it's very rare that a goalie is a guaranteed, 50, 60 games.
Right.
But talking about the top two guys, I think regardless if you're in a simple pool or you're in a pool that heavily rewards goals or penalty minutes, Crosby and Ovechkin are 1-2.
I agree.
And the way I rank those two guys, they're 1-2. And I would lean towards Crosby number one. And I would just based on, I think he'll probably play more games. Crosby has been lucky that he hasn't missed a significant amount of time. Ovechkin hasn't really either.
Sure, but he
missed 10 games last year.
Right.
And
it's important.
A lot of people, we've looked through a lot of guides. A lot of people are predicting a drop-off for Sedin. I am as well. I'm not predicting a 22-point drop-off like a lot of guides are, but I think he will drop off by at least 10, maybe 15 points.
Interestingly, as you and I talk about Crosby Ovechkin, I think that's the default. I mean, in Hockey Prospectus, the book that I read for...
Plug it!
Just came out. Book came out last week. It's a guide for not only for your pools, but just priming you on every single team in the National Hockey League and how they do things. It's very statistically based. I obviously highly recommend it because I was part of writing it, but I actually, just in general, I think it's a very, very, very quality book, and we're having Timo Sapp on from another author, and he's actually an editor as well of the book later on. But this book has projections, very detailed projections, having Ovechkin at 116 this year and Crosby 112. Having said that, McCain's Magazine, who were having Gus Katsaros on at 8 o'clock, McCain's Magazine actually has Daniel Sedin, Daniel, not Henrik, Daniel, being the leading point scorer next year in the National Hockey League.
I mean, that's a huge jump. I mean, Daniel Sedin had 85 points last year. So
yeah, how many games did Drew?
I mean, granted, 85, only 63 games.
Well,
yeah. I mean, so there. I mean, yeah. He probably had the best. I can do some simple math in my head and see about points per game there. But
he'd be at 110, 115.
Yeah, around there.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
I have Daniel Sedin ahead of. By the way, I've.
You did your own projections.
He did his own projections
here, and I have Daniel ahead of.
Who's your top five?
Daniel Sedin. You know, when they came into the league, it's 10 years now.
Right. Crazy. 99, yeah.
When they came into the league, Daniel was the scorer, Henrik was the playmaker, but Daniel always had more points, slightly more points. But Daniel Sedin is more of an aggressive player, and Henrik Sedin, let's be honest, that was the knock on him for getting the MVP last year, was that he got most of his points on the power play. Right. But regardless, who cares if you got your points on the power play? It's just that Henrik Sedin's point total jump, and we're obviously going to talk about this more later on in the show about players who you can draft right. in later rounds who will have career years this year. And I mean, some people consider those sleeper picks. Really, those are players that are just going to have good years, their best years, and you're going to be able to draft them later on when people are going to be, you know, taking
that's just
more
it.
Established.
And throughout the show, we're going to talk about sleepers. We're going to talk about busts. We're going to talk about breakout. You know, that kind of thing. Breakout candidates and sleepers, I think, are different. Sleepers are guys that you haven't necessarily heard about who could really surprise. Breakout candidates are guys who are, you know, second, third year, and they can really take that next step. So we're going to talk about all those things tonight throughout the show. Ezzy, I want to hear from you because you made put your own rankings out. You showed us before the show. Who rounds out your top five? If Crosby, Ovechkin are 1-2, who's 3-4-5?
Okay, I agree. I agree with you with Crosby 1, Ovechkin 2, and we're basing this on just overall points.
Okay.
We're not you know, considering goals, more the goals, because I do think Ovechkin will be at 60 and Crosby will be high 40s, 50.
Okay.
I've got Joe Thornton number 3.
Wow.
And a lot of people have Thornton more in the bottom half of the top 10.
Well, he didn't have a great season last year.
He didn't. He had 89 points.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a guy who led the league in the first lockout year, playing with Jonathan Chichu and Milan Mihalik. I think he's due for, you know, I think he'll easily pass 100. I've got Crosby 1, Ovechkin 2, Thornton 3, Nicholas Backstrom 4, and then I've got Malkin 5.
Nicholas Backstrom 4. So you don't have either Sedin in the top 5.
I don't have either Sedin in the top 5.
Do you attribute that to the team's overall, Vancouver's overall depth this year?
Well, you know, that's the problem with depth sometimes, is that depth will, mean that there's fewer minutes for your top guys necessarily. They want to save their legs. They're expecting a long playoff run. So there is a factor there you might have to think about.
And the truth is, you know, you hear, as he goes back from 4 and 5 is Malkin. Well, the truth is, guys, Crosby, Ovechkin, Malkin, Crosby, Ovechkin, Malkin, Backstrom, kind of in the same breath. The reality, the only person who would even maybe surprise people there would be Joe Thornton, and Joe Thornton's won, I don't even know how many, 3-4 Ross trophies. So
right.
you're certainly not far off base. Now, obviously, the Sedins, you're seeing a little bit of a regression there with Henrik. Do you want to round out your top 10, Ez?
Okay, yes, I will. I've got Daniel Sedin in my top 10. My bottom 5 in the top 10, I've got Stamkos at 6.
Okay.
I think his numbers will be similar to last year. I projected about 98 points.
Okay, so you have a 3-point increase. How many goals?
I think he's going to get the same. I think he'll score 50 again.
It's hard to argue. I'm going to pull up Hockey Perspectives right now because it's hard to argue that Steve Stamkos will take that much of a drop. He's just that good. And, I mean, he plays with good players. He's
only going to get better.
Especially now that
he's out of the zoo there. Now that they have a respectable NHL franchise again, he's only going to do better.
You project 98 points. Hockey Perspectives has Stamkos in 97, basically 97.
Okay. And I haven't seen that book.
That's
so
right, exactly, 47 goals. So you're right on there. So you have Stamkos as your 6th.
Okay,
and now last year, last year, Crosby 2, Ovechkin 3, Backstrom 4, Stamkos 5 in points. So the only person again is Thornton. Aside from that, on this, you know, the Thornton Sedin switch. Aside from that, you think last year wasn't a fluke for these guys?
I don't. And the thing is, our listeners should know too that obviously nobody thinks Daniel Sedin and Henrik Sedin aren't great players, but
exactly
they did kind of post ridiculous numbers. Henrik especially. I mean, there was a point there where he was getting 2 points, you know, for 2 months.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, I'll just quickly round up my top 10. Ilya Kovalchuk I have at number 7 with about 11-point increase over last year. I've got him, you know, in the mid-90s.
Any Devils bias factoring in there, Ezzy?
Well, I mean, if you look at his numbers after he left the Thrashers, they weren't that different, but I think a full year in New Jersey, he'll get back to his regular numbers. And his regular numbers were, you know, mid-90s. Yep. I don't think he's ever cracked 100, but he's always been mid-90s, high 90s. So just rounding out the top 10 here, 8, Marty St. Louis on Tampa. You know, he'll get his mid-90s again. 9, I've got Sedin, and I think he'll, you know, be somewhere in the mid-90s. And then 10, I've got, and this is a little bit of a bump up, is Kopitar. I've got Kopitar. 40 goals, 92 points, because I think, you know, well, I don't want to spoil anything right now, but LA is one team that I think is going to be, you know, a serious contender this year. And I think when you throw in some of the years that some of their rookies had, and second year guys, Doughty is obviously the big one, I think that is a team that's going to score a lot of goals.
And he's going to play with a lot of talent up there, and you know, he had chemistry with Ryan Smith early on last year, and then they kind of put a couple of players through. Wayne Simmons filled in there for a while. They really have a lot of depth up front. And obviously we'll talk about them as a team next week, but Kopitar took the next step, took a step towards stardom last year, if not already being a star, and people are projecting him to even take a further step this year.
Okay, there you have it. We'll leave it right there for this segment. When we come back, we're going to talk with Timo Seppä of Hockey Prospectus. We're going to go through a list of players, and Timo's going to give us his opinion.
Well, a list of players. I'm going to qualify that. A list of players, about 10 players who he thinks are going to have better years than people think, and 10 players who are going to have worse years than people think, and we're going to talk it out.
Exactly. Well, so we'll get some insight there from Timo Seppä. Let's leave it there. When we come back, Timo Seppä, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. Shortly past 7:20 in the evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
You can always count on Drew for mid to late 90s rock and roll.
You know, you're lucky that that's about all I know. That's it.
Drew, do you like the Gin Blossoms? Because me and Remus were listening to a little Gin Blossoms on the way to Minneapolis.
A little bit of some Hey Jealousy?
Oh, yeah. Man, Anna, Follow You Down.
Okay, good.
Great band. Underrated band from the 90s.
Well, it's better than whatever the Nickelback we had to listen to last week.
Good point.
Thank you. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show and occasionally the Music Hour, apparently. We're pleased to be joined now on the line by Timo Seppä from Hockey Prospectus. Timo, welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
Hey, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Very well, Timo. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
That's good. As we were saying, right before the commercial break, what we're going to do with you is we're going to go through a list of players that you've previously provided to us, and we're going to talk about the guys you think are going to have up years and the guys you think are going to have down years. My role here is I'm going to throw out the names to you, and then you and Richard and Ezzy are going to bat them all around. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Excellent. Let's start with your we'll go up and then down and then up and then down. We'll start with the first guy you have listed on your up. That's sure. Evgeny Malkin of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, obviously he was a Hart Trophy winner 2 seasons ago, and he had a down season last year. Looking for him to definitely have a bounce back to something closer to what he had in his Hart Trophy year. So, again, if you're in that late first round and you're weighing whether you're taking Evgeny Malkin or one of the Sedins, you know, I would go with Malkin because he's bound to bounce back. He's just too good, and you just got to wonder what was going on with him last year where his numbers dipped down a lot. You know, I kind of touched on some of the theories in the Hockey Prospectus book, you know, anything from the fact that he was, down in the dumps, that his parents weren't hanging around like they were during that playoff run to who knows what. But you're looking for Malkin to have a bounce back.
It was almost like Evgeny Malkin's parents were almost like the NHL version of Iverson's mom, right?
Right.
You know, Timo, it's interesting that, you know, you have the Hockey Prospectus has him coming up about 94 points. Last year he dropped an insane amount of points. I mean, from 113 to 77. So you spoke about it, and I think it's interesting that you point out, you know, late first round, a guy who basically 2 years ago was, you know, between him and Crosby for first, you know, him, Crosby, and Ovechkin for first overall. Now a guy you can get at the bottom of the first round, that's a lot of value.
Yeah, and definitely, and it's going to make a difference towards the, you know, obviously your first couple rounds are your bread and butter fantasy league, so you want to make a good choice with that. And as you guys were mentioning before, you know, the Sedins kind of had what looks like an unsustainable performance last year. Mm-hmm. So I mean, they're good players, but they're just not quite as good as it looked last year.
That's a perfect segue into one of the guys you have listed as a down year. That's Henrik Sedin.
Yeah, I mean, we're one of the guys wrote a column on that. Was that Tom Awad wrote a column on the website to basically say that he's just not going to have the same kind of year. The goal scoring rates that the Sedins had, that Alexander Burrows had, they're just unsustainable. So you're looking for a lot of those numbers to come down for Vancouver. We think overall Vancouver's a great team. It's just that some of those people were just having career years.
And Timo, we were talking about, sorry, Richie, I'll just jump in right here. Timo, we were talking about that before, and I'd love to, have Henrik Sedin as the second or third, highest scoring guy in my projected list, but I have him, somewhere in the late teens, 15 or something like that, because if you look at his numbers, he was always in the high 70s, low 80s, and he's a great hockey player, but there's nothing to think that he's that good,
Daniel's numbers really are better. I don't know that our projections in the book really bear that out. But I mean, if you're going to pick Daniel Sedin or Henrik Sedin, you should pick Daniel Sedin.
And I agree with you, Timo. It's interesting also, Henrik Sedin, very similar jump, almost exact same jump, just the opposite, from 82 points to 112. So it's interesting that, Malkin back up and Sedin a little bit back down, a little bit of regression there.
Yeah, I didn't mention him. I mean, you're going to expect Crosby to go down from 51 goals.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's kind of, it doesn't really make a difference because you're going to pick him first, second, or third in your draft anyway.
Player on the upswing, John Tavares.
A lot of people were asking. I was out at Islanders Media Day last week, and basically everybody's question about Tavares was, can he do the same that Stamkos did?
Right.
And,
wow.
Again, that's a little bit unfair, again, but the fact is, he's a wonderful talent. The second half of his year wasn't as good as the first half of his year, but he's a guy who everybody said has come back stronger and faster, and guys with this kind of talent, unless you're Crosby and you just kill it in the rookie year, the guys are going to have numbers that look pretty good in their rookie year, but you can expect a strong sophomore year from somebody like Tavares.
I definitely agree with you on that one. I think that, it's not unrealistic to think that he could make a 20 or 25 point jump. I was just going to ask you, do you know who he'll be playing with this year? Because I haven't followed the Islanders in training camp as much as the Devils, but we know that Kyle Okposo has an injury.
Yep.
But do you know who he'll be playing with, opening day?
He was. It was funny in the day that I went there. He was in the second group, so he was. For instance, Rob Schremp was between Molson. I'm trying to think who he was. I think he had Molson, and he might have had Okposo. So
okay.
Tavares was lined up with some lesser players. But the Islanders are going to kind of try to scrap together six good forwards at this point.
I know.
They're dropping like flies over there. I don't think it makes a difference. I mean, I think we've got him as 65 points in the book. I'll take the over on that anytime.
Yeah. Great.
You mentioned Robbie Schrempf real briefly there. You also have him listed as one of your up players. Is that really is that really largely because he expects to play with Tavares so much?
I think it can only help right now with some of the injuries they have there. I mean, I think he was probably a borderline guy where he might have gotten top six time. I think he probably will now. It seems like night and day he was just really unhappy and unappreciated and whatever in Edmonton, and just the coaching staff and his teammates seem happy with him now, and he's happy. If you prorate his numbers last year, he was one of the top couple Islanders in points per game, so I think he could turn into a legitimate top six forward for them.
I agree, Timo, and I think Rob Schrempf's talent, stick handling, and obviously the puck skills that he has are tremendous, very good passer. The thing I think gets sometimes taken, he gets a bad rap for whatever reason. I mean, we had him on our website, The Legal Curve, before. The website's shut down for the most part, and very, very, very easygoing, very easy to interview, very willing, and very, I thought he got a bad rap from my personal interactions with Rob Schrempf. Very pleasant guy, and I think sometimes when he was a little bit younger, maybe he partied too hard or whatever it may be, but I think at this point in time, there's certainly been a maturity, and there's been a curve there in terms of his maturity, and I think you're right about that.
Wherever he is personally in his development, plus where the team he's playing with right now and the coaching staff he's playing for right now, it's the right situation for him. This is the pretty much the best situation we could have for him.
Alex Burrows of Vancouver.
Basically, just what I said about the Vancouver players is that we're even projecting him to come down from 67 to 55 points. So I mean that's much more in line with what he had the year before.
Starting season with an injury too.
That's right. That doesn't help. Ezzie's one of Ezzie's boys, Travis Zajac.
You know, just the limited time I haven't seen him live, but just watching. If you end up with Zajac lined up with Parisi and Kovalchuk, that's just a killer
line. It's the best
line. I mean, obviously, everybody's going to pick Parisi high. Everybody's going to pick Kovalchuk high. Mm-hmm. But Zajac's the lesser one on the line that's going to get the benefit of that. So he's a guy that you might be able to pick up in maybe not the middle rounds, but, kind of down a few rounds, and he might really get the benefit of playing with those guys.
And one thing I didn't know about him, and Ezra and I and Michael, we went to a charity game in Winnipeg a couple weeks ago, and they were doing a little bit of a skills comp. Travis Zajac cracked 100 miles per hour on the slap shot, too.
Wow. So. Yeah. And he's a guy who he's got the makeup where, and this isn't a fantasy thing, but he could be a future Selke winner.
Agreed.
He's
that
kind of two-way player.
A guy on the downside, Mike Knubel.
He's just getting older. I mean, we're projecting him to go down from 29 to 19 goals and from 53 points down to 42 points. Obviously you want probably as many Capitals as you can on your roster, but some of the guys are going to start to age.
And he's one of those guys, just quickly here, he's always been one of those guys that he's always an attractive pick in later rounds because he's a big guy and he gets kind of those dirty goals in front of the net, and he's good for usually in the 50 to 60 point range, but obviously he benefits when he plays in the power play with the big guys.
And I mean, you got to remember, when you're in a fantasy draft, you're drafting against 9 or 11 or 13 other guys. And if you're expecting somebody to go down, I mean, somebody's going to be thinking of the old Mike Knubel, so somebody's going to pick him ahead of you. So just by that logic, if you think he's going to go down, you might as well not even list him, because somebody's going to grab him higher than you are.
Potentially the future of the Atlanta Thrashers, Evander Kane.
Yeah. Again, he was only an 18-year-old last year. He did very, very well for an 18-year-old. He had 26 points, and you have to remember that was only with 14 minutes of ice time and not a huge amount of power play time. So, somebody to take in the later rounds, but somebody that's going to do a lot better than the numbers looked last year.
Going to get a lot more opportunity this year, exactly.
Yep.
Sticking with the Thrashers, I think this is the key, D/forward, Dustin Byfuglien,
right?
Yeah, right. I think a lot of leagues have him listed as a defenseman now. I mean, if you can remember back a few years ago, that was the role he was playing with Chicago. On the World Championship Chicago Blackhawks team, he had one of the worst plus-minuses on that great team. And now you're moving him to defense, onto a worse team, even if he plays forward. I don't think it's a good mix.
It's almost like Byfuglien, as far as fantasy value goes, you should only really draft him, wouldn't you agree? And if you're in a really deep league where you need penalty minutes, because especially if he's on defense, he might even be lower than his 32 points or whatever last year.
Yeah, I think no matter how you cut it on Atlanta, whether he's playing forward or defense, I get the feeling you're going to be disappointed.
And I drafted Byfuglien once in a pool where he qualified as defenseman and played as forward. I think that's his only real value in a pool, is if he does end up qualifying for defense but ends up being pushed back to forward because they have so much depth on defense.
Ottawa Senator Alex Kovalev.
He's coming off of knee injury. He's a guy whose points have plummeted over the last 3 years from 84 to 65 to 49, but he's better than 49 points. Also, over that 3 years, his power play goals have dropped from 17 to 11 to 4. He's a guy who can pick an older player who can get a boost back up to double-digit power play goal numbers, especially with Gonchar in the lineup now. So I look for a little bit of a bounce back from him. nothing like what he used to be a few years ago, but a guy that you could pick in a lower round.
Read my mind with the Gonchar comment, because last year Ottawa didn't really have that point defenseman. This year they do, and they have a lot of good weapons like the Spetsas. Those guys are very good in the power play, so it could be very dangerous.
Those guys are familiar with each other, right?
That's true also.
Internationally.
That's right, and Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Let's talk about one guy you have up, one guy you have down, both from the same team. You have Scott Hartnell up, and you have Matt Carl down.
Right. I mean, overall, I was really impressed with the Hartnell, Leno, and Briere line in the playoffs. I mean, Scott Hartnell had a miserable season, and he looked like a completely different player in the playoffs. So I think if the Flyers are smart enough to keep those players together, I think that magic keeps on going. He's a guy whose power play goals have been pretty consistent over the last 3 years, but he dropped last year from 23 even strength goals to 6 even strength goals. Now that's going to be better than that, especially on this better club. And you know, he's obviously a guy who takes a bunch of bad penalties.
Oh, yeah.
So if you got penalty minutes in your league, he's good by that account.
Yeah, I actually had both of those guys in the same pool last year, and Hartnell couldn't hit the net if he tried. And Matt Carl really had a good start. He kind of faded a bit down the stretch.
Right, I was going to say about Matt Carl, I say in the book, he had a plus 19 by November 20th,
right,
and he had a plus 0 for the rest of the season.
Exactly.
So,
right.
You know, he's a guy who caught fire for a month and a half, and, you know, you can expect more like career numbers rather than those inflated numbers from the first month and a half.
And, Timo, I think the fear there is that if Carl ever does get pushed off the pairing with Pronger, then really his value tanks.
That's true, too.
An interesting guy I'm going to name now, returning to the Red Wings, Jiří Hudler.
Yeah.
Right, he was, you know, depending on how astute your league is, you know, some guys may not even realize that he's back in the NHL.
Uh-huh.
So who knows how low you could get him in your draft. But he's a guy who, you know, he was playing in the Russian League last year, but the 2 years before for the Red Wings, he had 42 points and 57 points, and that was playing only 13 minutes a night. You get that guy decent playing time, and he could really put up very good numbers. We're looking, in Hockey Prospectus in the book, we're projecting the Red Wings to be the second-best team last year to get back up to where they have been. So on a good team, if he gets some good playing time, he really could put up very good points for you.
I think the key with Jiří Hudler is if he plays any kind of defense, Babcock's going to give him a lot of ice time.
Right.
Let's go to a defenseman, really a guy, you know, on the downside of his career by all, from what everything I can tell, Christian Ehrhoff.
He had most of his numbers were in line with what he had before last year, but he jumped up to a plus 36. Now we're looking for the Canucks to be a good team, but I mean, you know, he was plus 9 2 years before that and minus 12 the year before that. So looking for him for the same kind of plus minus, you're probably not going to see that kind of fluky good performance.
And you should see some of the competition in that division should be a little bit better than it was last year. Like Edmonton can't be possibly as bad on a night-to-night basis, and maybe Minnesota's a little better, and you know, maybe Colorado with some of their maybe not, they were amazing, they exceeded expectations last year, but guys like Duchesne and guys like Stastny are going to continue to get better, so maybe the competition level won't be as low.
That's true, yeah.
Let's end it with three goaltenders. We'll do goaltenders now. Three of them that are up: Marty Turco, Pekka Rinne, Rick DiPietro.
I like that Marty Turco right there.
Well, I think, you know, he's had, you know, mostly down years in Dallas recently. You know, last year he was back up to a .913 save percentage after having two bad years. My best friend happens to be a Dallas Stars fan, and he's been, you know, begging them to get rid of Turco for years. The fact is, he's in a really good situation with Chicago. You know, Chicago was you know, doing well with Antti Niemi last year, so. It's just a question of where he's playing. Because he's playing with Chicago, he's going to pick up the wins, and you know, you could look for the same kind of save percentage again.
I couldn't agree with you more on the fact that Turco, I think, is going to be solid for Chicago. And I know Richard would agree with this. I don't think enough people were talking about the absence of Zubov and how that affected the entire team. I mean, Zubov, sure, you're talking about almost a Hall of Fame defenseman there, one of the greatest defensemen of you know, the mid-90s to basically 2 years ago. And I think that really, something like that, not to mention the fact the Stars weren't very good last year, really affected him. So
it's a great situation.
The other guys you mentioned, Rinne, the biggest thing, again, with him is the situation. Dan Ellis is off to Tampa Bay. So, I mean, he's really the main guy right there. So you're just going to look for more games, so you're going to have more wins from a fantasy point of view. And DiPietro, you know, word is that he's about as healthy as he has been in the last couple years. So just from a health standpoint of view, you know, obviously it's the Islanders. You can't look for too much as far as wins. You know, you don't look for any kind of killer save percentage. But in the lower rounds, the health news looks decent enough that he's you know, somebody you could pick in the last few rounds.
Three goaltenders you have on the downwards: Jonathan Quick, Ilya Bryzgalov, Tuukka Rask.
Yeah. Jonathan Quick, mainly because he wasn't that good, and he was overplayed by L.A. last year. And Jonathan Bernier, you know, very well may supplant him this year. So at best, it's a big risk taking him. You just can't look for the same kind of numbers that he had last year. Bryzgalov, you know, mainly we at Hockey Prospectus we look and we see goalies regress. I mean, we're also predicting, you know, Ryan Miller to regress. We're predicting Yaroslav Halak to regress. The fact is, Bryzgalov has a track record of just going up and down every year. He'll have a good year and he'll have a horrible year. So on top of the fact that we look for goalies to regress, we're looking for Phoenix to be worse, and Bryzgalov has been very Jekyll and Hyde year to year. So he's somebody who I wouldn't touch in the first several rounds of my draft. And as far as Rask, he still is a young goaltender. Boston rode him at the end of the season. The fact is, Tim Thomas is a good goaltender as well, and I'd look for that to be a pretty even split as far as playing time. If Boston's smart, you just, with a really young goaltender, you just can't have him start three quarters of the games and expect to have much left when you get around to playoff time.
Timo Seppä of Hockey Prospectus, thanks very much for joining us tonight. Give us a plug. Where can our listeners find you on a regular basis?
Well, you can find us at our columns at puckprospectus.com. I'll have an article looking into the New York Islanders that'll be up here in the next day or two. Obviously, look for the book Hockey Prospectus 2010-2011. You can find that on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca.
Thank you very much, Timo Seppä. We'll hear from you again later on this year, maybe next year for next year's Fantasy Hockey Preview.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Timo. Take care. That was Timo Seppä. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about, what are we talking about? Second line forwards, sort of your mid-round draft picks, some guys over there that you're going to target. Second-tier forwards. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show, live on 92.9 KICK FM.
Great.
It's
awesome.
Is this
Hey Jealousy?
Of course it's Hey Jealousy.
I thought I wasn't sure if it was Hey Jealousy or Follow You Down. I thought we did listen to Jim Blossoms on the way down this week, too.
Yeah.
Drew, we were just talking about the video of you at the Vikings game eating French fries.
It was chicken fingers, I believe, wasn't it?
Oh, chicken fingers, okay.
No, there was fries, and I think a lot of ketchup slopped all over him.
There was a lot of ketchup?
There was no ketchup slopped all over me.
I reached for a fry, and Drew like pulled his thing away as if I was, you know.
Well, because I know you well enough, you were going for a chicken finger. Right? I don't know.
I think you were pretty upset, too, when people were eating that pizza that we ordered Saturday night. And they hadn't paid for it.
Yeah, damn right. You can't say
I paid for it. Didn't eat it.
Well, that's your business. No one. That's your fault.
Yeah, it's a Ponzi scheme. You got a pizza scheme.
There's no pizza scheme. For those of you wondering what we're talking about, the Illegal Curve Minnesota Vikings road trip occurred this past weekend. And as you can see, Richard has come back worse for the wear thanks to his clogged nose right now.
And you geniuses missed the Illegal Curve shout-out on the Minnesota Vikings jumbo draw.
I can't believe we missed that.
I was getting my chicken fingers, I think, at that point in time.
I didn't see it.
I think Richard had just finished a Sierra Mist.
I had my Sierra Mist to recover. Drew was getting chicken fingers. Remus was passed out in his hands, and Anthony was looking aimlessly in another direction.
Let's not forget Harry. He had a nice bratwurst that I think he paid $15 for.
Yeah, that was expensive.
It was great.
It was a good weekend. Anyways, let's go back to the hockey draft preview. This is sort of going to be your second-tier players, you guys who are, you know, you're going to your 60, 50, 70-point scorers,
exactly.
Somewhere around there. You know, here's a, I mean... Who do you see from that group from last year taking a jump that can make that real big jump up to the next to that next level?
Are we talking defensemen, goaltenders? What are we talking about?
We're talking about forwards for the most part.
Talking forwards, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, don't include Evgeny Malkin in there. We know, you know, talk about a guy who played a full season relatively, who got about 70, 75 points. Who you think could make that next leap up until the upper echelons?
Well, I think we already mentioned Andrei Kopitar. As one guy who hasn't quite cracked, he's cracked 80, but I think, in my opinion, Andrei Kopitar is going to hit 90 this year. Exactly. We're not talking about guys that had injuries or went down from 90 to 75 or 100 to 67 or whatever. In Malkin's case, another guy, and Timo mentioned him. And I mean, it's the thing is in. You know, everyone can draft in the first round or the second round.
That's right.
The key to winning a pool is to get that. And I mean, the breakout term is a little bit, I don't really like that. To find a guy that's going to have a
gem,
career
a
year.
Gem, yeah.
A gem.
Like Stamkos last year.
He
helped me out a lot. He's made a pool, but he helped me out a lot with, you know, getting him in the fifth round.
And I think Tavares is another guy that you have to think if he kept that early season pace. Tavares came into the league and everyone said, okay, he's not gonna put up Crosby numbers. He was getting a point per game, and then I think he went on something like a 15-20 game drought where he had like 1 point.
And you know,
he's another guy, I would say.
I have a couple guys here.
Okay, let's hear him.
Veterans, though.
Veterans. You think veterans are going to take jump back?
Yeah, I do. I'm not saying that necessarily it's a guarantee, but Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg both got 70 points last year. Both had 80. Datsyuk played 80 games. Zetterberg played 74. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it this way, though. Those guys have played a lot of hockey. They were tired. You can see they were out in the second round of the playoffs against San Jose.
Zetterberg had injury problems.
These guys are still in their early 30s.
Yep.
They are in great shape. They have had a long off season. They play with. They're probably going to play with each other a lot this year, is what I read. You know, a bounce back to the 80-85 point area. I mean, Datsyuk 2 years. Sorry, Datsyuk had 70 last year, guys. The year before he had 97. And the year before that he had 97.
Yeah.
So what about a bounce back there? And Zetterberg. On the same note, Zetterberg had 70 last year, 73 the year before, but 92 the year before that. So he's had a full summer off, basically. Going to play with each other. He's only 30 years old, Zetterberg. I think Datsyuk's a little bit older. Datsyuk is 32. I mean, you know, certainly not way past their prime. Two guys there who could really jump back.
And Friends on that line. Friends,
dangerous.
When you put him on, even if it's Holmstrom or whatever, they got going later
Matty
on
Holmstrom,
in the season.
Yeah.
I mean, the first half of the season was an aberration, if you want to call it that, because last year, I mean, we talked about it a lot, and a lot of people in the hockey world were talking about it. Detroit wasn't a bottom feeder in the West. They had a new goalie. They had injuries. They had, you know, departures. Hudler, Samuelson. So, Richie, you just mentioned some bounce backs. I'm gonna throw out a couple guys that I think are gonna have huge increases in their point totals.
Okay.
And you can let me know if you disagree with these or you agree with these.
We'll see.
One guy, Claude Giroux, Timo was mentioning the Hartnell Briere line. Claude Giroux is a guy that I think I have him listed here in my top 50. I think he's gonna be mid 60s.
Really.
I was looking at a couple of projections on the internet.
He's
a couple of people had Giroux even higher than that. But Giroux is a guy that I think he's 22 years old or something. Last year he was at 47. So, I mean, that's a 20-point jump. Another guy, and I don't know if you could really call this...
he had a 20-point jump from the year before, though he played double the games, though, so take that into account.
And I think another guy, and this is a defenseman, I think Drew Doughty it will see a huge point jump.
Now, let me ask you
this.
I
don't think he's going to get to Mike Green high 70s, but I think mid-60s for Doughty this year.
We're going to talk about that with Gus Caceros.
I want to talk about that with Gus.
Okay, one more forward here quickly is Tyler Ennis.
You like him, eh? He really performed well.
I mean, I didn't know a lot about him, but he was a point per game in 10 games last year.
Yeah.
He's very young, I think 21, if I'm not mistaken, or 22. Put very good numbers up in the A.
Ennis is 21.
21 years old, and I think Tyler Ennis, I think he's going to play with Tim Connolly, if I'm not mistaken, and Pominville. Pominville's on the top line. He's going to play with Tim Connolly, and who would be the right winger on that line?
Well, it depends. I mean, what the...
I think Connolly's been centering him in the preseason. But that's a guy that I think...
Line combos right now, too, because they switch so much.
Ennis is still a rookie, so that's not really a huge breakout guy. But I think, as far as rookies go, I think... You know, I wouldn't be surprised if I have him projected at 60. So
I want to mention a guy. I mean, a guy that, you know, Winnipeggers, you know, the new god of the city here. That's Jonathan Toews.
Yeah,
I think Jonathan Toews is pretty much everything you're looking for in an all around player in the NHL. But fantasy wise,
I think
people
the same
might
as last year, Drew. I know what Richie thinks, but Taves, I don't see Taves going from, you know, 67-70 points to, you know, 90 this year.
I don't know about 90.
I don't see it.
I think you can take the modest jump to 80. I mean, this is a guy who does it all, and I realize this is one of those players, guys, who is far more valuable than his pool value indicates. Yeah. So you can't quantify exactly what he brings to the table necessarily, but, you know, he had 68 points last year and 69 points the year before. I would like to think that point total would increase. Now, I agree with Ezzy. I don't think it'll go to 90, but I think it's very possible.
I don't think Kane will hit 90 either.
Kane, too. I agree with you, Ezzy. I don't necessarily think he'll make that jump either.
Okay, that's just one of the guy I wanted to. I think people have to be cautioned to not overspend on
Kane
him.
Kane had 88 last year, so you don't think he's going to jump to the 100s, is what you're saying?
Kane?
Yeah, because he had 88 last year.
How did he even have 88? Well, he's good. I'm not the biggest Patrick Kane fan, but.
Well, I mean, 88, you see him jumping off. The thing is, let's go two ways here, guys, because Chicago's going to have more ice time for their best players, probably, with less depth. So, Kane, will he increase over 88? That's a tough one. It's a lot harder to say if he'll increase over 88 compared to Taves at 69.
Let me ask a guy. It's another guy who I think, and I mean, I like Tampa Bay this year. I like the moves they made. I know that they're weak on defense, but they're pretty good up front. Vincent Le Cavalier, is he now going to be? Is he a 70
year.
Player? 70
no, no, no,
point
he'll
player?
Be up. He'll be up.
Or is he back up into the 90s?
I've got him at 83. So if I say he's at 83, he'll get 83. No, but
he'll get 8.
Le Cavalier, you know, you guys. I was at the Hawks Lightning game last weekend.
Well, how do you think?
Someone I forget who made a comment. One of the writers. It was I'm not going to name names. It was one of the local media said they were a little bit disappointed in Le Cavalier's play, and it was a preseason game.
Yeah.
And you know, the two guys that were just amazing, that are always amazing, are St. Louis and Stamkos. Actually,
St. Louis played
well in
amazing.
The exhibition.
Agreed.
But I think that Le Cavalier will be a little bit higher, and I don't think he's maxed out at a 70 point guy. I think a guy like Le Cavalier, he needs to be. I don't know. I mean, I don't have his ice time off by hand right now, but he needs to be a guy that is leading that team.
He had 19 minutes and 47 seconds of ice time on average last year.
I mean, this year they're playing for an offensive coach. He seems reinvigorated with all the players around him, and not only that, more so the management in place and the owners in place. If I had to go over under 70, I'd go over.
Okay, that's the guy who I sort of jumped out at me. You know, here's a guy who got re-signed to a big contract this year for Montreal, Thomas Plekanec. You know, he had 70 points last year, 82 games played the entire year.
Big jump from the year before, right?
Yeah.
I think his numbers will be pretty similar.
You know what? Yeah, he's a very talented player. He gets a lot of ice time. He was 70 points from 39 the year before, which is crazy, but he had 70 points the year before that. So, you know what? He seems to be about a 70-point player. Hockey perspective has him going a little bit lower, but it depends on the ice time again, and if he plays with Camilleri, and, you know, certainly I wouldn't think it would be a bad top four-round pick if you take Plekanec there. I mean, you know, you're going to get a lot of assists. You know, if you want to get 40-plus assists, that's a valuable thing he brings to the table. Okay. Plays in all situations, too, right? So he's really valuable in that way, to regular face-offs.
Okay. Well, I mean, those are, you know, who else do you guys like in that second tier? Who else is there something that you think you're, you know, you'd advise somebody to, you know, this is a guy you can get, you know, maybe a round or two later than you actually, than his performance will dictate this coming season?
You know what we haven't talked about at all, and I know that in previous years we've been expecting a breakout, and that's Nathan Horton. When I was going through, you know,
how many guys does he burn? That's the problem.
Exactly.
You know, he burned me before.
And as far as hockey pools go, you know, Horton, this is his sixth year, I believe, in the league, maybe seventh. I believe his best year was either 2 or 3 years ago, and I think, you know, there's no reason to believe that, you know, given the right circumstances, that Horton could put up 70 points. I don't remember exactly here what I'm looking at. If
it's
I have
25, at 2 years 70. Ago he had 62, 27 goals.
And I mean, that was on terrible Florida teams,
true.
Right?
But playing with Stephen Weiss, playing quite a bit with Stephen Weiss.
Stephen Weiss, very good player. And obviously, there's, you know, a very talented offensive system there in Boston, and there's no shortage of good players for him to play with. So, I mean, Horton might be a guy that, you know, you'd think, I'll take him in the sixth round. But, I mean, if you're in a 10-team pool, sixth round, you're getting a 70-point player. That's not bad.
Good.
And
there's risk.
That's
risk-reward.
Once again, he's not a breakout Richie, and, you know, I don't know if I would go as far as to say he's going to get 40 goals or something like that, but he's got all the tools. Physically, very imposing.
All the tools.
And very, very talented. And obviously in Florida, he kind of was always, a bit of a mediocre fit there, right?
I wrote about him in Hockey Prospectus. You know, he's got a good shot. He's a good skater. He's a big, strong guy. In the right situation, he seems like he'd excel, but he's got to do it. Enough talk already, you know? Enough talk about potential. The guy's, I believe, 25 years old now, so enough talk about potential.
Is there any player switching teams this year that you either like the move or you really are afraid of the move?
We just talked about Horton. I think it's a, I don't know, but afraid, not afraid. I mean, looking at Jokinen and going back to Calgary, Drew. I think there is a risk-reward again. Florida guy, played really well in Florida, you know, has some talent, coming back on a discount, quote-unquote, at $3 million. That's a guy you have to watch for, both ways. That's a guy who could score a lot of goals, could be terrible. I mean, these are risk guys. That's why they're, you know...
Guy who left is also day-to-day right now with a back injury.
Yeah, I realize. It didn't seem like it was that serious. Sutter said yesterday he didn't think it was that serious, so I'm not too concerned about that. But, you know, he's a guy, obviously, with Tanguy there. Another guy, Tanguy's more from, you know, they both played there for a while, but Tanguy seemed more comfortable there his first time around, so I would expect him to be a little bit better. But there's a possibility that Jokinen could be that goal scorer. He's going to get a chance to play with Tanguy, and again, they're going to ride that line. So there's chances there with that group. Obviously, Chris Versteeg in Toronto, too. Mm-hmm. Opportunity knocks, right? They have a lot of opportunity there. He had a lot of opportunity in Toronto, sorry, in Chicago, but especially now, so in Toronto, on a team that lacks depth, especially up front.
Ezzy, do you have anybody that jumps out at you?
As far as guys that have, I mean, one guy that I think has the chance to get back to former numbers is Gagné on Tampa. I don't think that he's going to, you know, go back to. I mean, what was his top year? Maybe 80 points. But Gagné, I mean, injury problems are always there. Injury concerns probably. pardon me, but. As far as guys that have moved teams, I think that was positive for him personally, not the Flyers.
More opportunity.
And Gagné, I think, I mean, once again, I don't want to get too much into predictions, but those two teams, Tampa Bay and LA, I like guys in those situations to improve their point totals because of the opportunity there. Tampa Bay was very weak last year, and LA, I mean, they're heavily reliant on that top line, right? So I think, for me, I really like Gagné. To, you know, bounce back, I guess.
Okay, there you go. Let's leave it there. When we come back, Gus Katsaros coming on from McKean's Hockey. We're going to talk defensemen. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Fantasy Hockey Preview Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. Remus, that's for you.
He's singing in the studio.
Tell the people where you were on Friday night, Remus.
I was at the Slash concert.
Yeah, you missed the opening night of the Illegal Curve road trip to stay behind so you could hear November Rain live and in person, right?
We didn't actually play November Rain, more so Sweet Child of Mine, Rock Queen, all the classics. It was a great time, you know what?
Patience?
Not quite Patience. They did play Fall to Pieces from Bell Revolver.
Oh, really?
It's worth noting, just before we get to Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey, that my first ever concert when I was 10 years old was Guns N' Roses at the Winnipeg Arena.
Look how you turned out.
I know.
Jean shorts?
I felt as safe as I possibly could because I was with my friend and my friend's father, and my friend's father happened to be the criminal defense lawyers for everybody else that was in attendance, so we were the safest guys there.
On that note.
Let's welcome to the program Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey. Gus, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Gus, we're going to talk defensemen with you, so let's, you know, sort of get the obvious question out of the way first and foremost. You're drafting a defenseman. You want to draft the first defenseman possible in your league. Is there anyone to select besides Mike Green?
Why not Drew Doughty?
Well, you tell me.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think that you can go wrong with either of those guys. You got two power play quarterbacks. I love LA. They're a team that is not just on the move, but, you know, there's some pretty hefty talent up front that can help out with a man advantage. I like the goal scoring development in Drew Doughty. Mike Green, I thought, was a little overvalued at 30 goals, and I think he's pretty good between 15 and 20. So either way, I don't think you can go wrong. The only thing that might persuade me to pick Doughty over Green would be a plus-minus. I feel that Doughty is a bit more of a complete player, and as such, he'll end up being more productive away from the power play. And Mike Green won't necessarily get the same amount of points away from the man advantage.
Gus, does Duncan Keith enter that conversation, or it's 1-2 and he's definitely the next one?
You know, I wouldn't even put him as a definite. I think after those two, you can pick and choose. I personally would go with Dan Boyle, to be honest with you. I absolutely love what the Sharks can do up front. And, you know, here's another instance where you have two smooth-skating, puck-rushing defensemen that love to handle it. Boyle's also got the bigger shot. He's a better goal scorer. He's I don't want to say better, but I think he's got a better natural ability to shoot. He's got a harder shot. So I think it's just a matter of preference. At the same time, too, I also think that from a plus-minus standpoint, Keith might be a bit safer. Right. You could even add guys like Sergei Gonchar, and, you know, I might even throw a Thomas Cabrelle into that loop as well.
I hope I'm not jumping ahead of ahead too quickly here, but a defenseman that he's a rookie this year who on Washington, John Carlson, Richard and me are familiar with him because he played in the USHL. How many points do you think he'll get this year? You know, if you could give us a projection, and do you think that, if anything, that'll take away from Green's numbers?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think that Carlson is probably, you know, it's funny. I love John Carlson. I watched him come in through Hershey, and you saw how he was able to do certain things that Green kind of does. For example, they both are very, very great puck rushers. John Carlson has the ability to jump into off the point the same way that Green does. I think that Carlson does it a little too aggressively at times and may not necessarily cover up. So I think that there's still a little bit of maturity that might have to go down there. And unfortunately, due to salary cap constraints and all the kind, all the other peripheral stuff, he's going to have to learn the rest of his game at the NHL level.
I guess there's a chance. I'm sorry to cut you off. I guess there's still a chance that he might play some time in Hershey, right?
Yeah, I just can't see that. You know, there's nothing for him to learn in Hershey that he can't learn at the NHL level anymore.
He's already physically mature enough to play in the NHL.
Well, it's not just that, too. You got his decision-making. You could see what he could do. He could keep up with the game. He reads it well. His anticipation is there. He's not getting burned. He's not getting burned consistently enough to say that he needs some more seasoning.
You know, on that note, and Carlson would be one of those big rookie hotshot choices. Some pools have rookie requirements. Is there any other defenseman that you think could be worthy of that rookie selection?
Sure. P.K. Subban in Montreal, obviously.
Potential-wise, can you give us a bit of description of how you see him?
Well,
for this year.
This year, here's a guy that I think is another one that, you know, the reality is he could learn some things in the AHL as well, too. There's elements of his game that are already NHL ready. He's quick enough. He's fast enough. He's smart enough. He's able to jump into the play and be productive enough and get back into the play. I think that there's some element of decision-making that's still a little immature where he has to pick his spots, and he has to realize that, you know, there are other players on the ice, and he can't do everything himself. Once those little things kind of get ironed out, I just can't see how he can't be a 40-point defenseman in his rookie year this year.
And, you know, on Subban, I think it's interesting, you have Carlson, do you think he'll get the opportunity to continue to play the minutes he was playing at the end of the playoffs, or do you think that, you know, it'll drop down a bit and be a little more consistent in that top six?
You know, I think it depends on two factors. One, how bad off is really Andrei Markov? Subban gets all the opportunities as while he's gone. But at the same time, there's a lot of complementary features there. They can both pass and distribute very well. They can both, you know, fire it off the point.
Sure.
They can both pinch. So you could put them on two separate lines, and now you have a distinct pair of rushing defensemen that, you know, that skill set is very rare in the league. So a team could really use that as a spearhead to throwing off the offense without people realizing that it's part of a set play. You know, I think it's an underrated skill that both Subban and Markov have in terms of being able to rush that puck so efficiently.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve radio show by Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey. Now, Gus, you know, a guy that I always liked, Sergei Gonchar, makes the move from Pittsburgh to Ottawa. What's that going to mean for his fantasy value?
Well, I don't think it really changes very much. He's a number one guy. He's still, and I don't just throw this word around, he's still an elite defenseman in this league. There are very, very few defensemen that I can see that can rush the puck with the grace and the stability and the patience and poise that this guy can do. He's only going to make the Sens power play that much better, and he's going to maybe kick you know, Alex Kovalev in the butt a little bit. You know, there's a good connection there that can, you know, maybe kickstart the enigmatic Russian as well.
I'm going to steal this one from Richie before he can ask you about this one, but because I know that he's really high on him. Zach Bogosian on Atlanta, on a team that's probably not going to make the playoffs, but, you know, they might be competitive. But do you agree with some of the poolies who think that, you know, he might get up to 40 points in his second year?
I think 40 point might be the cap, but at the same time, if Bogosian hadn't had wrist issues after November, he could have been in double digits, like in the late teens in goals scored. And, you know, as far as we're concerned, at McKean's, we feel that one of his greatest assets, aside from the way that he's able to skate and move and, you know, move the puck, not necessarily rush it, but move the puck up, is his shot. He's just got a boomer off that line, and with no Pavel Kabina left there and no other option, this guy's going to score a lot of goals.
Speaking of Kabina, Gus, he moved back to Tampa Bay. They have a lot of offensive weapons, especially on the power play. Do you see him seeing an increase in his point total, or just kind of putting out the same numbers as usual?
I really don't see there being any big difference in Pavel Kabina. He's done the very same thing in Toronto, and then he went to Atlanta, same kind of thing. There's an element of immobility where... I think that teams are going to end up exploiting that a little bit more now, especially with how speedy Tampa Bay forwards really are. But at the same time, too, he still does have that booming point shot, right? But where is he going to play? I mean, the Tampa Bay uses one of either Vinny or you know, Martin Saint-Louis or somebody else on the point, you know, and they're trying to groom Victor Hedman at you know, which might not necessarily be the right thing either, but that's not the point. The point is there's really no spot for Kabina to elevate his totals more so than he's had over the last two seasons.
You're segueing well here, Gus, and I want to ask you about Hedman, because Hedman was a hyped up big-time player, big guy, good skater, you know, good positionally, very similar. A lot of people talk about a lot of the skill set, but the points and the offense has never really been there. Do you see him turning into that offensive producer? Do you see him kind of being, you know, a step above the Mark Stahls in terms of offense, but not quite as good as the guys we mentioned up as the top 5-10?
Well, I don't think that you'll ever see Victor Hedman be an elite defenseman. He's not that. That's not his role. He's a big, big guy. I wish he played with a bit more of a meaner streak. He doesn't. Maybe that's something that he has to develop with his size and, you know, more experience. I think what you'll end up seeing at most from Victor is a solid two-way game, good presence. He's very smart with the puck, so his assist totals could actually skyrocket. I don't see him being a big goal scorer, though. And another thing is I wish he would actually take more advantage of some of the shooting situations he seemed to let go of last year.
Okay, Gus, this is going to be the time that everybody always wants to hear. You know, we want three sleepers from you right now.
Defenseman sleepers or any sleepers?
Defenseman right now.
All right.
And Gus and I were talking about it. I'll interrupt quickly. Gus and I were talking about it today. The email about the idea of a sleeper in the 24/7 information agent, and he raised the point to me, and we've talked about it before. I totally agree with him. But if people are asleep at the wheel, who would be those three sleepers, guys?
For people who aren't on Twitter.
I believe it all comes down to value, and it's a matter of where you get a guy in accordance to where they feel is the best value. As far as sleepers go, and in terms of defensemen especially. First, right off the bat, Dan Hamhuis in Vancouver. I heard your segment earlier, and I understand that you know, you guys might not, or whoever wasn't too high on Vancouver anymore. I think that they're it. I can't see them going anywhere but the finals, and I think that Hamhuis gets the opportunity here that he didn't necessarily have in Nashville, where he's able to do a bit more with the puck and to feed these guys up front that he wasn't able to get results from back in Nashville. So Dan Hamhuis is one. Second, Kimmo Timonen. Don't underestimate the power of Philadelphia's power play. He's the guy that moves the puck up. He's the guy that mans the point. Pronger's just a shot. Kimmo Timonen's the guy that actually does the work. So don't count him out at all.
There's a reason why he makes about $20 million a year, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. That's it. Another guy that we didn't give him as high a point total as I think that he deserves is Dmitry Kulikov in Florida. I think that this kid is just what he showed last year, especially to end off the season in terms of poise, and he was getting burned by trying to do things that at some point in time in his career, people are going to be going, wow, just how did he do that? You know, or why did he have, how did he have the sense of mind to do something like that? Well, he was showing everybody how he was doing these things towards the end of the season. This year, he may not necessarily blow the lights out, but he's going to give you a lot of good production.
Yeah, we can't talk about sleepers, Gus, unless we talk about busts. And or maybe guys, we talked about a little bit earlier with Timo Seppä of Hockey Perspectives about, you know, guys might not have years we expect. Let's focus on defense here. There are three guys who people are talking about a little bit too highly that you and the guys at McKean think might not be as good as people think.
Well, I automatically think of Brent Seabrook when I hear a statement like that. I think that Brent Seabrook is a much better defensive defenseman. I think that he gets caught in terms of peripheral points, and
Agreed.
You know, his role is better as a shutdown guy.
Right.
That's not to say that he can't put up big points. I don't think that he'll ever put up big points, but I mean, I think that some people overrate him.
On that point, I thought it was interesting because when he was playing at the Olympics and he wasn't really sheltered, I thought that was very much that demonstrated that he wasn't able to, not that he wasn't capable, obviously you're playing the best players in the world, but he was maybe a half a step below those guys, and I thought that showed during the Olympics.
That's exactly how I would say that. You see, there's an element of what makes him and Keith such a fantastic pairing, and they both bring those individual skill sets.
Right.
Well, when you're competing against the best of the best, you could see how Keith can elevate his game, and he was just fantastic. I mean, that was his coming out party.
Absolutely.
And you could see that Seabrook, effective as he could be, there were other options. So the bottom line here is, at the NHL level, Seabrook provides a different set of skills that will always be beneficial to a team, just may not necessarily be on from a fantasy perspective. And one more guy that I think that people might overvalue him a lot, Paul Martin in Pittsburgh. I'm just not a Paul Martin fan. Yeah, he can rush. He's a good puck mover. He's solid. He's unspectacular. That's the word that I want to use. Like, he does good things. He just doesn't do anything spectacular to really get noticed on a night to night. But I'm just not convinced that he's this point producer that people have made him out to be over the last two or three seasons. And he's constantly injured. There's nothing that points out in his game that he's ever going to be an elite defenseman, yet I keep hearing his name amongst the best of the best, and I kind of scratch my head over that.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you on that one, and I think that, you know, Pittsburgh Penguins fans, you know, fortunately they will probably do better than they did last year in the playoffs, but as far as, you know, replacing Sergei Gonchar, I think they should be happy if Chris Letang and Goligoski improve a little bit and stop thinking that, you know, one of Paul Martin or Goligoski is going to turn into a 60-point defenseman.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, you do not replace, and I've used this argument in defense of the Thomas Cabrelet thing in Toronto, you cannot replace those skills.
Right.
Once they're gone, out of your lineup, they're gone. They're not replaceable. And, you know, it's a hefty price to move a player that is able to efficiently and effectively and patiently move that puck up the way that these defensemen do. Gonchar's skills, once they left Pittsburgh, see ya, they're gone. Paul Martin and any combination of players will never bring those skills back. So you have to adjust your entire philosophy based on what you've just lost from this one player.
Gus Katsaros, before we let you go tonight, tell our listeners where they can find you on a regular basis.
Well, you can find me at McKeenshockey.com. I also do contributions at MapleLeafsHotStove.com.
And excellent.
Where can they pick up the magazine, Gus? Because you sent it to me. It's a terrific magazine. Very, very well done.
Great, thanks very much. You can pick it up at anywhere, any newsstand, anywhere where you can find a magazine, major bookstores, Chapters Indigo, et cetera, across the U.S. and Canada.
Thanks very much. Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey. Thanks again for joining us tonight on the Illegal Curve Radio Show.
Thank you, guys. Have a great draft.
Take care, Gus. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, we have a modified version of Rapid Fire, and then we still have to hear from Justin Goldman of Dauber Hockey. Still a lot to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM. Who would think for 8 hours would make me listen to this song? The Bar Star is personified in my car.
Oh, yeah.
Drew, I think that was Limb Lifter.
Wasn't that off the...
The Jersey Shore soundtrack? Yeah. That was in there, too. It was either I listened to that song or I drive my head through the windshield, and I was considering driving my head through the windshield.
You know what, Drew? I didn't think a show could come along that was better than The Sopranos,
Drew,
but Jersey Shore proved me wrong.
You know what?
I just got head through the windshield. Somebody call 911.
Jersey Shore is unreal.
I actually found out...
If you want to sit down and actually laugh... Until you,
Matt,
like,
that show sounds terrible.
It's hilarious, Richard.
It's really funny, but it's unreal.
It actually just went to a new level of hilarity for me. Apparently, Snooki. Jersey Shore in Japanese is actually called Macaroni Rascals.
What? That doesn't even make any sense whatsoever.
Well, I mean, it's you're translating Jersey. Would you expect to see Jersey Shore in Japanese anytime soon?
You know what though? When English titles are translated into French, they're often very different. So I wouldn't be surprised if stuff is lost in translation. So
ooh, lost, is that a movie reference or just?
No, I didn't even mean to reference a movie there.
You ready for rapid fire?
That's exactly what I. Hang on.
Yeah.
Rapid fire.
You can write all the stories you want, but you can't give the least more talent.
I don't want to see highlights from the blue and white game.
It's Jay Rosehill fighting Mike Commissaire. Come on, get that off my TV.
Sickening.
I would agree with that.
I mentioned the worst team in the league. You have to be able to get the puck out of your own zone.
Rapid fire.
Taylor Hall. Can you man up and handle the pressure?
Exceeding expectations last year.
Alex had like 16 knee surgeries.
Rapid fire.
This is in stark contrast to the Toronto Maple Leafs camp, where players have been encouraged to fight in the lunch line.
Thanks, Remus. I appreciate that. That was well done.
The Leafs hating.
Yeah, that was the Leafs hate rapid fire. Last week it was the Coyotes hate.
You're just getting ready for every single Saturday night watching that awful team.
Remus, awesome soundtrack, sound effect, and Richard Jay's Rosehill reference.
Man, I was watching the Monday Night Football game. It was the Niners against the Saints. I'm a Niners fan, and they kept cutting in on TSN.
In that sense, my condolences.
They've been playing terribly. They kept cutting in on TSN, and Darren Attition Jennifer Hedrick kept showing the highlights of Mike Komisarek fighting Jay Rosehill at Lakeshore Arena at the practice facility. It's like, don't you have, there's baseball playoff races, there's other scores, there is other news. Can you give me any other highlight aside from the Jay Rosehill? Mike? And it happened every like 30 minutes. They kept showing the same highlights.
Well, I mean, TSN's already asked new analyst Mike Johnson at least five times if he thinks Nazem Kadri will score 50 points or if he's going to be productive.
50
I mean,
points, he might score 50 points in the juniors.
Yeah, I feel bad because TSN has to do it, CBC has to do it, Sportsnet has to do it. I mean, I'm certainly not going to turn off these TVs because it's on, but I mean, I guess they have to pander to the Leafs audience. But also Winnipeg and everybody else in Alberta, BC, go back. Everybody hates the Leafs.
Well, of course. Here's how we're going to work rapid fire for tonight. I took a box draft, and I think most of our listeners will be familiar with what a box draft is. And I took a local one out of the newspaper, and it's got 16 groups. We're going to go through those
give a description of the box draft just so people.
The Winnipeg Free Press runs a box draft every year. So they've probably been running one for 25 years.
Exactly. So we're going to go through as many of those groups as we can. Compare the six players they have in that group, and we'll talk about it. Group number one: Woltek Wolski, Drew Doughty, Louis Erickson, Jacob Voracek, Mikko Koivu, Patrick Sharp, and Stephen Weiss. Who are you taking?
You better repeat them after you say their full names, Drew, because I'm going to forget, man.
Write it down. You have a pen in front of you.
I mean, if we're in this room right now, we're all going to take a little selection here. I mean, I don't know how you pick against Mikko Koivu.
Yeah, I was going to say Mikko Koivu.
I mean,
not really close.
Do you want to keep, other guys might have breakouts. Mikko Koivu's one of the... I realize sometimes he's one of the best players in the NHL. Doesn't always necessarily translate to points, but I don't know about you, Remus, but Mikko Koivu's sitting there in that group. I'm going, well, he's the best player, and he's certainly been the most established in terms of points. Why wouldn't you take him?
You know, Richie, I'll take Voracek in that group.
I'm
going upside big time. Probably will be Koivu. I mean, he's your money in the bank pick in that group of five. Yep. But I like Voracek. It's going to be tough to see what happens with that team because you've got Filatov coming back. He'll probably play on the second line, to start off with. Yeah. Voracek, I think, though, with Nash, I mean, he could get into that territory where you think he'd be in his third year, which is what, like, 60, high 60s. But the thing is, Koivu is more of a 70s point guy. So.
And you're talking to a guy who's a big Jacob Voracek fan.
Yeah.
But I would still say Koivu there.
I think it might even be Jakob.
Anyways, group number two, Pavel Datsyuk, Henrik Sedin, Ilya Kovalchuk, Danny Heatley, Daniel Sedin, Patrick Kane, Ryan Getzlaf.
I'm gonna hop in right here. Kovalchuk. I think Kovalchuk's numbers will be higher than next year. I think the other two guys are the Sedins that I think you'd pick ahead of Datsyuk. That's a pretty good group, actually, but I'll go Kovalchuk.
I would go Daniel Sedin out of that group. The Sedins might have a little bit of regression, but they're still, to me, they're still probably the best bet for points in that group. There's some upside and some bounce back potential other places, but Daniel Sedin, although Henrik might also be a possibility.
Okay, group number three, Milan Hayduk, Timu Solani, Ray Whitney, Martin Irat, J.P. Dumont, Chris Kunitz, Andy McDonald.
Is there a pass on there? Did he get passed?
That was six players, Drew.
That's six in the group.
I was thinking McDonald or who's the other one? Or Martin Irat.
You got Hayduk, Solani, Whitney, Irat. I only got four.
Hayduk, Solani, Whitney, Irat. Okay, you know what? Like, if Drew,
who were the last two there?
Well, Drew's on the phone. Drew's taking a call. He's got double duty.
Drew's ordering a Nyakwa pizza right now.
I think if I had to take one, it's interesting that Solani's a power play player now. He's a good scorer, but overall points, I don't know about that. Drew, got a call on the line?
Yeah, we have a call on the line. Let's do one more group, and then we'll get to the caller.
Okay. We didn't pick anybody, but we'll give him the next group.
That's fine. I was talking to the caller.
People in the group.
Marian Gaborik, Alex Semin, Patrick Marlowe, Brad Richards, Corey Perry, Paul Stasny, Rick Nash.
That's a tough one. Wow.
Nash?
I don't know. I mean, I think that... Ezzy, what do you think? That's a tough one. That's a
tough group. That's a tough group because obviously this is based on last year's totals.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? I would probably go with Marlowe in this group. Gaborik, his totals were down. Stasny, his numbers were okay last year. I think it's in between Marlowe and Stasny in this group. But once again, Nash had an off year last year based on his numbers from previous years. So I think Patty Marlowe is good for about 85 points.
In a box pool like that, Gaborik has upside, but how much upside does he have over the other five guys? And the risk is that he gets injured and you can't change him. So I wouldn't take Gaborik there. I'd probably err towards what Ezzy had to say.
Okay, let's go to the caller on line one.
Here we go.
Hang on if I can get the...
I got it.
There you go. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. You said you wanted to expand on what we were talking about with Gus Katsaros from McKean's Hockey.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, here we go. Sorry about that. Have you guys on speakerphone for a second?
No, don't worry.
How's your drive? Yeah, basically, I just wanted to, I guess for all the poolies out there, just throw out a few general things, which I'm sure a lot of you already know, but...
Sure.
One thing is that anytime you're looking at Canadian teams or, you know, Chicago, Pittsburgh, these really uber-popular teams, Detroit as well, I think there's always a tendency to have those guys overvalued. Like Jonathan Toews is always going to go way, like he's a great player, but he's always going to go earlier than really his fantasy value, I think.
Agreed.
Right.
Good
point.
Very Dallas Cowboys, New York Yankees kind of betting lines kind of theory.
Exactly. Yeah. Just guys that people are familiar with because, you know, there's a range with everything. And just with fantasy, I mean, guys, they know, and a perfect example again was the Seabrook thing because he played on Team Canada. Same thing with guys that have played through World Juniors, guys like Braden Coburn, Cam Barker, though he does have lots of offensive talent. Anybody that, and a name that guys recognize.
Sure.
And similarly, the undervalued players will often tend to come from teams like Dallas, where you have a James Neal, you have a Jamie Benn.
Yep.
Louis Erickson's a perfect. Even he's so underrated.
Even Louis Erickson is a great skater, great shot. But Brad Richards last year had 90+ points.
Yeah, 91 points.
Nobody saw him play once.
Not bad, huh?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. I agree. I think that you're getting a lot of value there to teams that fly under the radar, especially in the, media market that we live in.
Yeah, and they also talk always about these Western Conference teams, too, because obviously the Leafs get a lot of play, and anybody the Leafs play on Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah.
But you don't see L.A. play. I mean, people know about Doughty. They know about Kopitar. But they don't know as much about guys like Jack Johnson, who is kind of an up-and-comer. I don't know if he's going to be fantastic offensively, but obviously there's a lot of potential there.
Sure.
All those guys, San Jose once again is fairly well known, but a team like, not Pacific Division, but Mikko Koivu is another great underrated guy.
Just talk about him, yeah.
Who's going to give you, I know the first show I ever listened to, a great show, you guys were talking about the Mikko Koivu contract, and though he's getting paid a ton of money, he's a very good player, both two-way player.
And yeah, you know he is, and for example, the money he's getting paid is not necessarily based strictly on points, but overall,
no,
I
definitely
think
not. Yeah, but he does put. He is a first line center.
That's exactly
who,
right.
Will also be a shutdown. He's quite a range of skills.
He's an interesting guy because I analogize him to Toews. I mean, they do more for you on the ice that counts for pools. So
for sure.
Maybe sometimes those guys. Now Toews, obviously, the superstar guy. More publicity gets more attention, and a guy like Koivu who could perform like Toews really could put out those kind of numbers.
And I think Gus made a lot of great points. The one I would tend to contend with is he talked about Hamhuis maybe being an undervalued guy. I think you're obviously not putting a ton of stock in Hamhuis necessarily because he hasn't been performing offensively the last few years in Nashville. But I think he's caught a bit. He's a left-handed shot. He's caught behind guys like Erhoff and Edler, who I think are both better offensive players.
Ballard too,
I'm not sure that Hamhuis really has a lot of offense to give you this year necessarily.
I agree.
So he might.
I think you throw Ballard into that mix too.
In Colorado, I also think that Gus, the reason why he's probably, you know, projecting that Hamhuis will get more points is, you know, obviously Vancouver is a stacked team, a lot more talented offensively than Nashville, and like you just said, he's on a team with better defensemen that could help him. But yeah, I tend to agree with you. Hamhuis, I don't think is as offensively talented as some people might think he might be on Vancouver.
But I think what Gus thinks is that Hamhuis will see a boost similar to Seabrook because they have so much offense and so much, you know.
He might. He'll definitely have more than he's had in past years, but in past years he wasn't even relevant, so it's maybe a moot point. But just quickly, I guess there's a few general guys who I just think are, you know, guys who could, having bounce back years that I would expect at least. I think David Krejci is a perfect example of a guy.
Very good player.
You get him in mid rounds who had 70 points 2 years ago. Yep. He's got a lot of upside. You get a guy
two more names
like,
quick.
Yeah, real quick.
Krejci.
Okay. Yeah.
Agreed. Krejci, I agree with 100%. Who's the next?
I think Brian Little has a shot to have a. He had a good year 2 years ago with 30 goals. Poor season last year. He could be a nice later.
He's riskier. But,
he is riskier, but
there is upside there, and if he gets opportunity, especially with the new coach, it should help.
Yeah, I think Voracek could potentially break out in Columbus. You never really know.
Yeah, we were just talking about him, actually. Yeah.
Oh, you did? Yeah. I think also Martin Hansel is a very good late-round pick in Phoenix because it looks like he might stand at the first line.
He's actually being discussed right now heavily. In the Ustream chat room, Hansel's being discussed.
And
Corey,
he's got a nice new contract, and we're pretty high on Hansel, too.
Yeah. I really like the guy's game overall. Once again, a better two-way player, but also has some upside. And I guess the last guy is Yuri Hudler, who's coming off of the KHL season, so people might forget about him.
Yeah, Team Estep, I mentioned him.
Yeah, we talked about him in the
second. And also Van Riemsdyk, having his sophomore year, might have a jump there.
Hey, that's more than three calls. Come on, we got to get back to our box pool. No, I'm just kidding. Those are. I like your picks.
JVR is pretty good. Yeah. Appreciate the call, though.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Anytime. Great call. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
I like the passion. I don't want to be in that guy's pool. I know what he's talking about.
That's right. He knows exactly what he's talking about there.
He's almost as talented as we are.
Except he didn't listen to you. He didn't listen to you. He didn't listen to the second segment, though.
No, it seems seemingly not. Moving on. Jeff Carter, Marian Hossa, Nathan Horton, Bobby Ryan, Mike Camilleri, Alex Hemsky, Matt Duchene.
Once again, this is very difficult. I'm not a fan of the
box
pool.
Why is Matt Duchene in that group?
Well, he had a 54-point rookie year, or 53 Maybe. Points. You know what, Drew? I mean, once again, I don't like the box pool because I mean you're talking about point different. All those
I'm not saying that you should be in a box pool by any stretch. I'm just giving you guys that a box pool.
Give us the names one more time.
Jeff Carter, Marian Hossa, Nathan Horton, Bobby Ryan, Mike Camilleri, Alex Hemsky, Matt Duchene.
Safest bet there, to my mind, is Hossa, because he generally is reliable physically for the most part, and he's going to play a lot, especially with the lack of depth there. And he's, you know, you might talk about a little bit of a dip because of the finals, but I think Hossa's the safest bet there.
I agree with him being the safest bet. I think these players are all kind of in 70 to 80 point range.
Yep.
Camilleri, I think, will probably put up better numbers. He was ridiculous in the playoffs.
Just ridiculous.
He won't keep up that pace. No. I wouldn't be surprised if Camilleri has 80 points. I don't know if that's what I projected him at. But you know what? I'm going to take Bobby Ryan in this group. New contract, new 5-year contract. Has nothing to worry about. Very young. Same age as Crosby. Second overall pick in the same year. I'll take Ryan in that group for about 75 points.
Next group. Hold on, I'll go slowly. Phil Kessel, Travis Zajac, Brad Boys, Daniel Alfredson, Claude Giroux, Chris Stewart, Jason Pominville.
Stewart shouldn't be in that group.
Yeah, Chris Stewart.
Well, he's a good player. He's going to score a lot of goals last year. I think there, I mean, Ezzy's going to pop out Giroux, because Ezzy, Giroux, you think is going
to I think Zajac.
Would you take Giroux over Zajac?
I think Zajac had 69 last year, where Giroux was in the low 40s. But Giroux, I think, will get up to the high 60s.
Zajac's a safer bet, though.
I think Zajac, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to take Zajac over Giroux in that group.
Right.
But who are you taking that with, Richie?
You know, I would take a little bit of a risk there. I'd toss out Claude Giroux in that one. Why not?
I was going to say Zajac. You know, I think with these box pulls, what you have to do is narrow it to your top two.
Multiple choice.
Yeah, it's very much. Yeah, you have to cross off. You don't want, like, Chris Stewart, throw him out. And you have to say who the top two are, top Fair three. And
the only thing is, Richie, you know that I'm not very good in multiple choice tests.
But you're in med school, Ezzy, so you got that going for you. So you did okay there. Yeah, exactly. The MCAT was no problem. Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Evgeny Malkin, Steven Stamkos, Joe Thornton, Nicholas Backstrom, Martin St. Louis.
Problem is the players who aren't Crosby and Ovechkin get wasted because they don't get picked ever. Points pool, if it's strictly points pool, I said earlier in the show.
Malkin.
Points pool, I think I take Crosby. Anything else, I'd take Ovechkin. Crosby gets a ton of assists. He is, to me, always wants to get better, and also doesn't take as many penalties. You know, suspension issues there. I would take Crosby there. But well, I mean, you cannot go wrong with Alexander Ovechkin.
I wasn't really listening. So Crosby and Ovechkin are in this group.
It's the first round draft. It's the group of first round draft picks.
Why would you even put Crosby and Ovechkin in a box pool?
That's the whole thing. But if they're in a box pool, they should only be there by themselves.
Okay.
Well,
I'll take Crosby.
Maybe we take him.
I was going to say Crosby. I'm saying after if you throw out Crosby and Ovechkin, you have Malkin, Stamkos, Thornton.
That's a different question.
Lee,
yeah.
Then that's a way better question. Who do you
I agree.
There?
Exactly.
There's a 15 point drop off there.
Wasting the Stamkos and Backstrom to the pool because you're throwing them in a group with Crosby and Ovechkin.
It's a box pool. I'm just using it as an example.
Worst pool ever.
Alex Frolov, Martin Havlat, Patrick Elias, Shane Doan, Johan Franzen, Kyle Okposo, Danny Briere.
Is this the washed up pool? Johan Franzen is the best player in that group. Bar none, if you say so.
You know what, though? I'll take Danny B. I agree with Franzen's number two, but I'll take Danny B. I have him back up
they're
in
both,
early.
They're both injury prone.
That concerns me. Briere, in my projections, which you'll see on the website, we're going to post it up. I think Briere is going to hit 70-75 this year again.
Wow.
Eric Staal, Simon Gagné, Henrik Zetterberg,
ooh.
Mike Green, Jerome Iginla.
Once again, you're putting a defenseman with forwards.
Derek Rowe, Mike Richards. I'm not the one who invented this box draft, for the record.
I think you said meant
Derek Roy was the second last one.
I thought you said Derek Rowe.
Rob Lowe?
Like, yeah. Like Mike Rowe from that show.
Really? Did I not? Anyways, maybe I was watching Derek Lowe play pitch
baseball.
Pool,
right, Drew?
I know, I won the baseball pool. I had Derek Lowe.
Okay,
that's a repeat, by the way, on the baseball pool, everybody.
Terrible draft.
No self-serving comments.
Just to end this terrible
Richie,
draft.
Tell us about your book again.
I'll take Henrik Zetterberg in that. Henrik Zetterberg will bounce back to 80 points again this year. And
should we put it on the board?
Yeah, I'll take Zetterberg.
I'm with Etienne Zetterberg. I hate box pools, though, but that was a fun segment. You know, snake pools are the way to go, and if you're really into it, auction. But auction's a little bit too much, I think, for hockey.
Anybody here do a rotisserie hockey pool?
I do it with Mike Colligan. Who's the radio show, by the way, debuted last week. I listened to it. He did a very good job.
Drew, I do a nice rotisserie chicken on the weekends if you'd like to come.
Only if it's beer can. I only want a beer can chicken
from
you. I'm
in that roto, like, quote-unquote, experts one for a legal curve, and it's fun. I didn't grow up with it, so it's not my favorite, but I do enjoy it. It's a little bit different. What you do in those pools is you pick based on categories, so goals, assists, power play goals.
Penalty minutes.
And it's actually a head-to-head one, so you play every week and see who has more of those and then whoever has the total.
I actually think if I went into that pool, my head would explode off my shoulders. I don't think I'd be able to handle that.
Fair enough.
You probably have daily pickups also, right?
Well, Drew, you know what it is. Rotisserie pools are kind of like a chili, you know, like a chili burger. You don't get it very often, but it's kind of fun once in a while.
Wow.
Just, you know.
On that note, we're going to break. When we come back, Justin Goldman of Dauber Hockey for the final segment, and then cheers and jeers to wrap up the show. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Radio Show live on 92.9 KICK FM.
What are you doing with music? You're killing us.
This is actually another one from the Jersey Shore soundtrack.
I think this is from Seth's iPod.
It is from Seth's iPod.
Oh, my.
8 hours, folks. 8 hours of that. when I normally would be listening to late 90s moody rock and roll.
I gotta be honest with you. I don't know if Rick the Boss would like you playing this stuff, because he plays good music on the station.
Okay,
you're playing this Jersey Shore stuff.
Listen, I'm not arguing with you.
I've never seen. I've seen like 5 seconds. I don't even know who any of these people. I know.
Stop pretending you're more highbrow than the rest of us.
Yeah,
you only know Ronnie because
you
have a friend.
Ronnie. Snooki, because she was at that roast, wasn't she? Eating a roast. And the other one was the situation, who's like shows his abs, right?
Holy Debra.
They all show their abs.
Oh,
the truth is, Richard's trying to be all highbrow, but he's really a big Teen Mom fan.
I don't know who that is.
Teen Wolf.
Teen Mom. It's a show also on MTV.
I try to watch something a little
bit
more
educational. Drew, did you ever watch Sabrina the Teenage Witch when you were younger?
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Radio Show. One final segment for tonight. We're pleased to be joined from Dauber Hockey by Justin Goldman. Justin, welcome to the program. I don't know if you heard any of that Jersey Shore conversation we were just having.
See there?
We've lost Justin.
There you go, Justin. You here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, sorry about that. A little technical difficulties. Anyways, welcome to the program, Justin. Let's talk goalies with you.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. You know, it's the goaltender position right now in the NHL is sort of it's a position very much in flux and in transition.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, teams are very much, they're not paying a lot for goaltenders, but, you know, fantasy-wise, wins are wins. You know, who's going to lead the NHL in wins this coming year?
I think one of the top guys this season is going to be Roberto Luongo. And for me, I look at the goaltending position from a different perspective. I don't look at stats I mean, you can go online, you can go on NHL.com and look up any statistic you want and find it, and it's a finite number. But for me, it's all about opportunity and the role that they play on their team. So a guy like Roberto Luongo, a new goaltending coach that's there full-time, will be with Luongo every step of the way. He sheds that captaincy. He's got a better defense in front of him. All of these great things just add up to a guy who's probably going to win. You know, last season he had 40 wins right on the dot. There's no reason why he can't get 43, 44 wins, have a little bit better of a save percentage, a little bit better goals against average, and a few more shutouts.
A lot of things seem to be working in his favor in terms of Luongo. Justin, do you have any concerns at all about Corey Schneider stealing some starts because they're trying to rest him for the playoffs?
A little bit. I think Corey Schneider is a great young talent. We saw it just over the past few days. He got lit up for 8 goals against. I watched him very closely in that game. He still had a great positive demeanor, never got down on himself, never lost the confidence, came back and had an excellent game. I think it was last night, only giving up 1 goal to San Jose. So Corey Schneider, I mean, I know the coaching staff has said, hey, we're going to slate this guy for about 20 starts. Whenever you hear a coach before the season even starts say that goalie X is going to get X number of starts, they're just feeding you lines because it always comes down to what the starter is doing, how healthy is he, what kind of a rhythm is he in. So to me, I mean, yeah, I still think Corey Schneider gets close to 20 games, but that's because he's talented enough to get those starts, and honestly, I think he deserves that kind of a workload. But then again, it all comes down to how Luongo handles his workload and how much of a rhythm he's in. So I still think you're going to see a 60-20 split when it's all said and done.
Okay, the next guy we wanted to ask you about, Justin, is Marty Brodeur. I've got him listed as the second-best goalie in the league. I agree with you that Luongo is one. What do you think, you know, Brodeur's season will look like, you know, based on the fact that they've brought in a better backup goalie in Hedberg, even though he struggled a little bit? But what do you think, you know, this season, you know, brings for Brodeur, better numbers than last year, or is there going to be a significant drop-off?
Well, 45 wins is a really, really high number to hit, and that led the league last season. And to me, I mean, I love Marty Brodeur, don't get me wrong. He's a class act. I love the fact that he plays that half-butterfly style, and it's so untraditional when you look at the other top-flight goalies in the league like a Tuukka Rask or Henrik Lundqvist. To me, I see him not getting those 45 wins. Maybe closer to 40, maybe even 39. And the guy is a year older. The league is just a little bit faster as far as the talent that he goes up against. And when you just don't have the you don't have the skill to refine your game and you play the same style year in and year out, I mean, goalies have to evolve on a yearly basis. You can't play the same style and get away with it forever. It's not to say that Marty Brodeur is any less talented of a goalie or he still doesn't have the mental fortitude to win 45 games, but I just don't think you're going to see as quality statistics as you saw last season.
You know, you talked about, sorry to interrupt you there, I just wanted to say quickly, you know, last year Marty had 9 shutouts, and, you know, a lot of people didn't acknowledge that. Miller was the best goalie. He deserved the Vezina. As far as shutouts go, what are some of the goalies that you think that should be drafted, you know, based on the fact that shutouts are highly rewarded in fantasy play?
Well, shutouts, to me, it's a lot about team defense and just confidence overall. And so I go back to Roberto Luongo. I mean, the team in front of him is so much better defensively. Yep. Of course, we haven't seen them play a regular season game yet, so there's still a lot of unknowns. But heading into a draft, I still put Luongo up there. I mean, he's got the experience. What he went through last season, I think, really plays a role into the maturity of his game and his mental toughness. And when you have that kind of season, I mean, he went through the ringer, whether it was dealing with the captaincy or the Olympics or all those games where he really fought the puck. I mean, he didn't have great rebound control, and he didn't play to the best of his ability. But when you have that kind of a season, you come out the next year and you've been through it all and you have that experience, you usually end up playing better, you know, this season. So I still look at Luongo. Yeah, Marty Brodeur, I mean, the defense in front of him is even a little bit better than last season. So even though Brodeur won't get to 45 wins in my mind, I still think he's a guy that can still get 6 or 7 shutouts. 9 is, that's a remarkable number. I mean, 45 wins and 9 shutouts, you do the math, and that's a high percentage. Another guy that I wouldn't overlook at all is Henrik Lundqvist.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about his game that I'll point out real quickly, no one's really talked about this because you haven't seen it on NHL.com, but the new leg pad restrictions, I mean, that plays a huge role in Lundqvist's game because you know a lot about his goalie pads. I mean, he has a higher thigh rise than any other goalie in the NHL. Yes. So we all know that he likes to sit on his goal line and make those kind of saves, but now that he doesn't have those massive thigh rises on his pads, he might be forced to take a step out because he really has to now, because he doesn't have the pad length that he used to have. And that, to me, is going to be a good thing for his game, because when you take a step out off your goal line, you're just taking up more space in the net. The shooters have a little bit less time and space to get their shots on goal.
Who do you take? So, oh, go ahead, Justin.
No, I mean, that's just the thing for Lundqvist. I see him being a guy who, I think last season he had 34 or 35 wins. You know, the team in front of him, it's questionable on whether they're any more solid or less solid than they were last year, but he's a guy who always posts a really high save percentage, and I just think this is the year where you finally see him just a little bit come off his goal line, and that's a good thing for his game.
Joined by Justin Goldman of Dauber Hockey. Justin, who do you take if it's between Tuukka Rask and Ryan Miller?
I'm a huge Tuukka Rask fan because the style that he plays and his butterfly is absolutely outstanding. The way he seals his pads to the ice and the fact that he's so quick, but when he goes down, he has such a straight back, so he eliminates a lot of space up high.
Yep.
You know, I want to choose him as a goalie aficionado, but you can't go wrong with Ryan Miller. 41 wins last season, yeah. You know, just the Vezina winner, everything he did in the Olympics. And the Olympic dynamic plays a role this season because what goalies experienced the season before, it parlays over. And Ryan Miller, to me, is going to have so much more confidence this year than he had last year. He's more comfortable in the locker room being that team leader for the Buffalo Sabres. And I just think, a lot like Luongo in the Western Conference, Ryan Miller is going to be that guy in the Eastern Conference that just, night in and night out, he's going to be so consistent, really good save percentage, good goals against average, could post a lot of shutouts. So even though I love Tuukka Rask, I got to go with Ryan Miller on that one.
Justin, I want to get your thoughts on the San Jose Sharks goaltending situation. I mean, they jettisoned Nabokov. He's been right up at the top of the league in wins for the last number of years, but he couldn't get it done in the playoffs. What do you think about their new goaltending duo?
It's one of the most – I'm baffled by this, you guys. I mean
– how did that happen? How did they get this goaltending tandem?
I don't mind it.
It's pretty good.
Well, I mean, Antero Nirimaki, I feel bad for this guy because – he came over to San Jose expecting to be the number one guy.
Yeah. This was finally going to be his shot, right?
That's true.
This was finally going to be his shot. This guy has gone through a lot. Remember, Antero Nirimaki in the 2006 Olympics tournament MVP.
Yep.
He was on fire, and he really proved to me, as a guy who loves Finnish goaltenders, that he could have been the next best thing. But for whatever reason, you know, the hip injuries never help. That's one of the toughest injuries for a goalie to sustain.
Yes.
Okay, and so he just battled really hard. And the one thing about Finnish goaltenders, the style that they play, for whatever reason, it works so well in the NHL.
They love lots of shots.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is they understand how to handle the workload. I could go on and on about why Finnish goaltenders are all the rave right now. It really just comes down to the coaching there. I mean, if you were to look at per capita or square mile of the number of great goalie coaches that are in Finland compared to Canada or the U.S., it blows these North American countries away. There's amazing goaltending coaches in Finland. They all teach the same system, and all these goalies are coming over now, right? Even some goalies in Sweden that are getting Finnish coaches to work with them, they're coming over and they're just primed and ready to go. And so Nirimaki is a guy who's got some experience. He's more of a veteran goaltender now. And even though most of the people out there will say, Nirimaki, he can't cut it. He wasn't able to cut it in Tampa Bay. You know what? I watched him in Tampa Bay. He went on some serious rolls and had some serious streaks. He wasn't the most consistent goaltender, but that's a lot of the team in front of him and just some of the things you go through on a season-to-season basis. In San Jose, I think he seriously, if it wasn't for Niemi coming over, probably could have won close to 35, 36 games, had a .915, close to .920 save percentage.
And like you said, I'm just to jump in here quickly, like you said, it might be better in San Jose with Niemi and Nitamaki's situation where you got a 50-30 split, whereas, you know, Nabokov played so many games, and, yeah, he put up the great numbers, but, I mean, Thomas Greiss wasn't really reliable to give you that much more than, you know, 15 games against weaker teams. So I agree with you 100% again.
You know, Justin, on this Finnish goaltending, I wanted to ask you about two guys who I think are kind of interesting cases. First is Pekka Rinne, and the second is Kari Lehtinen. What do you foresee for both of them?
I actually was at the Avs Stars game last night, and I am very fortunate to have a great relationship with the Stars goalie coach, a guy by the name of Mike Valley. And some of the things he told me about Kari Lehtinen blew my mind. And tell you, and I know this from experience just watching Lehtinen over the years in Atlanta, when he's healthy, he is one of the best goalies in the NHL. You cannot discredit his size, his quickness, and his flexibility. And when you have such a high combination of all three of those things, all it takes is a rhythm. And that's the biggest thing. I mean, you want to look at goaltending from a fantasy perspective. Everyone looks at statistics. I don't get into statistics a lot. I look at the other things like, you know, mental toughness and composure and consistency. And goaltending in today's NHL is all about rhythm. And if a goaltender is able to get four or five starts in a row, win two or three of them in a row, he continues to get more starts, his confidence goes up, everything's going well for him, these are the best goalies in the world. We're talking about the 60 best goalies in the entire world. Okay, all of them are capable of going on amazing runs and having seasons like Tuukka Rask had last year, even a guy like Jimmy Howard, who's not the most talented guy in the world, but still had a great season. So for me, the biggest thing for Kari Lehtinen is obviously staying healthy and then getting into a good rhythm and getting five, six, seven starts in a row where he's facing consistent shots, which of course he'll get in a Dallas system, and just be able to get on that rhythm and really play at his best. And when he plays at his best, he is electric to watch. He's an awesome fantasy asset. And to me, you know, you're talking about some sleepers or some busts, things like that. I put him in the sleeper category because you cannot discredit his flexibility, his size, and his overall just great skills.
And what about Rinne?
Pekka Rinne, another goaltender with just incredible skill upside. Another goalie who has awesome size. And I know I mentioned this earlier about goaltenders who keep their back very straight when they're in the butterfly, eliminates a lot of space up high even when he's down. And one of the things Mike Valley told me, and it's great that it happens to work both ways for both Lehtinen and Pekka Rinne, very, very active hands. They control a lot of shots by having their hands way out in front of them and just being able to redirect pucks and take up more space just with their two hands. So I love Pekka Rinne. I think he still has to learn a lot about reading plays and understanding the NHL game. He doesn't have all the experience in the world, but he's a guy who's just so incredibly talented. If he can get some help in front of him on the defensive end and some scoring from the forwards in Nashville, he's a guy who could easily win even more games than he had last year. I don't know off the top of my head how many wins he had last year.
Yeah, 32 last year.
32 last year. I mean, no doubt about it. He's a guy who's capable of winning 35 games, and it just comes down to the team in front of him and how much of a rhythm he can get into early in the season.
Justin, we want to just quickly ask you about Jonathan Bernier. And by the way, you're giving some really good insight here. Yep. You're a very astute guy, and the way you're talking about goaltending is impressive, honestly. The one guy we want to ask you about, and we were talking about him earlier, this is on a team that I think is going to be really good this year, the Los Angeles Kings. We want to get your take on Jonathan Bernier. How many games do you think he'll play, and do you think he'll eventually become the number one goalie?
You know what? I've been saying this since the end of last season when he had those three straight wins at the very, very end of the season. The dude plays so maturely for his age and his experience. He is a solid rock. Nothing sways him. Nothing screws with his confidence. And even though he's 5'11", he plays like a 6'2 goaltender. So to me, I mean, I'm looking at Bernier as a Tuukka Rask 2.0. It's only a matter of time before he takes over, you guys. Okay. And I drafted him in 2 out of 4 of my fantasy leagues, and I drafted him pretty high because I know now that with Erik Erzberg not even getting any preseason time, he's got that hand injury or whatever's going on with Erzberg. I mean, that's terrible news for Erzberg, but it opened the door wide open for Jonathan Bernier. And you'd have to think he's going to make the team out of preseason. And I'm telling you, I mean, it could be October 30th. It could be December 30th. He's going to start to take starts away from Jonathan Quick. And it's going to be awesome to watch those two guys battle it out because they're both very capable.
Bernier's better.
And Jonathan Quick played 72 games last season. That's a heavy workload. And there's no reason why L.A. can't go with a great tandem, kind of like what Washington's doing on the East Coast. But Bernier's he's the complete package.
Yeah, 72 games a lot.
Did Bernier not win the Rookie of the Year in the AHL last year?
Yeah, he was amazing.
Yeah, he did. He did in Manchester. Yeah. And I'm telling you, I mean, he was NHL ready last year.
Led the league in save percentage and shutouts. Wow.
Yeah.
He was NHL ready last year. And don't forget, this is a guy who's only 5'11". His pads got tapered a little bit because the way the new pad requirements work or whatever, it's all about how tall you are or how tall your legs are. So the shorter goalies get affected more than the taller goalies. So he probably lost close to half an inch, a full inch of padding. He's still going to be an incredible goalie, probably have a very long NHL career. And like I said, it's just a matter of time before he gets the starts and really gets on a roll and takes away some of Jonathan Quick's thunder.
Justin Goldman, before we let you go tonight, tell us where our listeners can find you on a regular basis.
Oh, my goalie website is thegoalieguild.com. It's a pretty good scouting resource for prospects especially. And then on Twitter, I'm very active on thegoalieguild at Twitter, so you can find me there. Every Monday, I'm on Dauber Hockey. I do like a fantasy recap called School Block Mondays at noon on Dauber Hockey.
There we go.
Thank you very much, Jonathan Goldman of Dauber Hockey.
Justin.
Jonathan. Because we were talking about Jonathan
Quick and Jonathan Bernier.
Jonathan Quick.
Exactly right. Getting confused here. Thanks very much for joining us, Justin. Take care. That was a terrific segment.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks very much.
I mean, I don't mean to keep flirting with Justin here, but wow.
Or do you?
Very knowledgeable guy about goaltending. I mean, I'd like to hear him talk about some forwards.
You have a stiff back, too, has he?
Well, no, but I mean.
God. Thank God you said back.
But honestly, the way he was talking about goalie pads,
yeah,
I mean.
I like that.
He was talking about a scout blowing
his mind.
The
reason we got it is we're not here to get you guests who don't know anything. We're here to get you guests who can talk about anything. I thought all three guests
were great. We got the goods
tonight. Yes, 9 o'clock. It's time for Cheers and Jeers. Cheers and jeers. Cheers and jeers.
My jeer is going to be the way that the new media has to handle that Pat Byrne situation. People need to just take a step back.
I'm going
to
cheer the Winnipeg fans, all 13,000 plus that showed up to the MTS Center.
Cheering Dallas Stars forward Brad Richards. He donated $500,000 to a local Prince Edward Island hospital.
Cheers and jeers.
Cheer or jeer.
Interesting music selections tonight, really. I must say that, but that's okay. Michael Remus, start off cheers and jeers tonight.
All right, guys. You know, I'm kind of conflicted here. I don't know if I should cheer this guy or jeer this guy. You know, this isn't a fantasy thing. It's more of a news. Let's talk about Ian LaPerriere. As recently came out that he took a slap shot to the head and had a brain contusion during the playoffs, and he recently admitted to Paul Holmgren, the GM, that he's been suffering through concussion symptoms. And he sat out a bunch of games in the playoffs, but played through the symptoms. He says that he was in concussion denial, and now he's going to be sitting out the start of the season from concussions. You know, I want to cheer him for, you know, because every player grows up wanting to win the Stanley Cup. But I think, you know, what we know about concussions now, what we've seen, especially with football players and how guys, you know, especially what's happening to Mark Savard and David Booth, I kind of, you know, I've got to give him a bit of a jeer. You know, you've got to, you know, take a step back and look out, you know, what's really important.
Well, I like that, Remus.
That's good.
That was well done. Nicely done. Ezzy, cheer or jeer?
And you could even cheer him just because that's absolutely crazy. And we all know that how that's crazy LaPerriere is, but he's a warrior. I'm going to cheer. Richie already knows I'm going to cheer this. I'm cheering, I guess. Who am I cheering here? CBC, the NHL. But it was announced, I think, later this afternoon that there's going to be two 3D games two games broadcast. Yeah. One on December 11th, which will be on CBC between the Leafs and Habs, and then the Heritage Classic in February between the Habs and the Flames. I guess you know that they like the Habs in 3D or something. But I think that's pretty cool. You know, I don't know how many people have 3D televisions yet. Just so their listeners know, to get the games in 3D, you're going to have a 3D television. The games will still be broadcast in 2D, but I think that's pretty cool. I mean, you know, the ESPN's broadcast some football in 3D, and it's good that the NHL is keeping up with it, because you know they're saying that 3D television will probably be, you know, commonplace quite sooner rather than later. So that's kind of neat for people that, you know, have those televisions.
Richard, chair or
chair? Well, I'm going to actually have a personal chair tonight. My chair tonight, I wrote my portion of the Hockey with Perspectives book, and they had a little part where you can thank people in the section. And I wanted to thank dedicate the book to my dad, and I wasn't able to because I guess they lost the sentence that I sent in later. So I'm going to do that tonight, and obviously thank him. If not for him, I wouldn't be able to write this book, so parts of that book. So
excellent. I'm going to end up the show tonight. I'm going to cheer, and I'm going to cheer the HBO 24/7 that's coming. That's going to be featuring the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Washington Capitals in the lead up to the outdoor game. You know, the January 1st, it's going to be taking it at Heinz Field. I think this is just great promotion for NHL. You know, nothing that they could do, and their in-house marketing geniuses will do it anything as well as HBO does with these 24/7. I don't know if you've seen it. You know, they do them for boxing frequently, mm-hmm. and they leave you so amped up, ready for the game, and so excited that this will be a marketing dream for the NHL. I think for them to have approached HBO or however it worked out, this is a win-win situation for everybody around.
Before you do your wind-up, Drew, I'll preview quickly next week.
Yes.
As he already has booked up, Eddie Olchuk is going to be part. Next week is our three-hour season preview. We're going
to
go through every single
team. 3 hours, 7 to 10 next
this
week.
This has been long
three
overdue
guests
to get
every
Eddie
single
on.
Team, 3 hours. Eddie Olchuk is our first guest at 7:20. We have tentatively booked Eric DeHatch for 8:20. He is, I've said it many times on the show, the best in the business. We're looking to find one more guest. We have a couple guys in mind for the 9:20 time, and we think that's going to be, hopefully, one of our biggest shows of the year and one of our best for sure.
Excellent. So stay tuned next. And, of course, you know, as soon as we have any more guests booked for next Wednesday, we'll be tweeting about it. So, you know, might as well just follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook. You know, become a fan of the show, IllegalCurve.com. You can become a fan. If you're in the Brandon, Manitoba region, this show will be on CJ 106.5. tomorrow night at about 7 o'clock. Follow, you can subscribe to our feed on iTunes. Remus will have this show up. Download it to your iPod. You can listen to it right before your fantasy draft.
That's right.
You know, the show will be on iTunes sometime tomorrow. Just search for Illegal Curve. A replay of the show will be available immediately after on Ustream, www.ustream.tv/IllegalCurve. And a replay will be tonight. Will be Sunday morning on Kick FM from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Thank yous tonight. Timo Seppa of Hockey Prospectus. Gus Katsaros of McKean's Hockey, Justin Goldman of Dauber Hockey. Big thank you to the three men on the other side of the glass who did my partners in this program.
Big thank you,
Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus. A fabulous job, great analysis as usual from you guys. Until next Wednesday night, from beautiful downtown Winnipeg and Kick FM Studios, we wish you good night and good luck.
The Illegal Curve has been presented by Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Richard Pollock. Tune in again next Wednesday at 7 for more of what you love.